You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Michael K. Show.
At 5 o'clock, we thought he was on Twitter. We thought he was in. And then he pulled out. He was not on Twitter. It was fake. I mean, they gained traction. They're getting thousands of follows. Bob Costas, his son Keith, who works for the MLB Network, told John Heyman, that's not my dad.
Oh, my God.
Bob, he put so much value in each word.
Words are weapons.
And I use words as tools, but as weapons. All,
yeah, he really gets it. I mean, he's much better than you.
Yeah.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so a quick recap, everybody. It was the other day where Bob Costas comes on Twitter, at least that's who we thought it was, and the guy who wasn't Bob said, I've decided to give this a try. I'm just paraphrasing now. So go easy on me. And it got everybody.
Yep.
It got me. It got Don. I sent out a message, welcome aboard. I'm watching the followers of the Bob Costas Twitter account just skyrocket because everybody loves Bob Costas. And then his son Keith told John Heyman, that's not my dad. My dad is not on Twitter. So we thought it'd be fun to talk to Bob, and he joins us now. Bob, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you today? Happy holidays.
Happy virtual holidays to you guys as well. Always good to talk with you. But hey, Michael, whatever became of a little healthy skepticism? Aren't we in the quasi-journalistic world supposed to be at least a little bit skeptical?
I was skeptical, but I said, you know what? He's waited 10 years, so this could be it. I was skeptical that you didn't have a blue check because you're Bob Costas, but I know that takes time to get that. But because of the unbelievable reaction from this fake account, have you thought about really doing it?
No. Someone asked me yesterday, what are some of the things I would do before joining Twitter? And off the top of my head, I said, I don't know, binge watch The Real Housewives of Orange County, hire Rudy Giuliani as my personal attorney. There's lots of things that I would do, misguided as they may
love
be,
you,
before I'd ever wind up on Twitter.
But here's, I know there's journalistic integrity, Bob, and we should all be skeptical, but what overwhelms us sometimes is the want to. And we wanted that to be you because we want to know what you think about certain things. Twitter would be perfect for us. So, yeah, we were suckered only because we really wanted it to be true.
Well, you guys know, and you give me the space, it's tough for me to be limited to 256 characters. So that's a non-starter right there.
I've always called it the cesspool of social media, but I have learned to appreciate it and the information that's on it, if you know what you want to look for. What is the main reason why you wouldn't go on?
Because of the downside. Yeah, I understand people that are putting out important information. I understand that it can be a career builder if you use it judiciously. Or, you know, let's say you're a band that's moving from one city to another and you want to post great show last night in Amarillo, see you Wednesday in Albuquerque. That's useful. Just the same way as we all use Google and go to various sites to get credible and reliable information. But so much of what's out there on social media isn't just untrue. It isn't just stupid. People used to be uninformed. Now they're aggressively and angrily misinformed. Mm. And not just on things that are relatively unimportant, like what we do, but at the highest levels of government, the highest levels of politics. Maybe it's lower now because of the way it's been degraded. But all this misinformation, all this angry nonsense, why do you want to be part of it? Why do you want to enter that kind of hurly-burly? At least I don't.
I am so in lockstep with you, Bob. And if I were someone like you who does not need it for your career advancement at all, there's no reason to be there. If you have something truly important to say, you have outlets in which you can do it. I think this is the right move.
There you go. It's a non-move.
Right, yeah, the non-move is the move.
Treading water.
Now, are you at all curious at the person who did this? Well, are you endeavoring to find out who that is?
Nah. Twitter took it down. That was all that mattered. Mm-hmm. Whoever he or she is, good luck to them. I'm not angry at them. It just doesn't matter to me.
Now, one thing that the person said, and it caught my attention, they said, well, what do you think about the DH in the National League? And you said they shouldn't have a DH in the National League, and they should take it away from the American League. What does the real Bob Costas think?
Well, the real Bob Costas thinks it's inevitable, A, because teams are concerned, as you well know, Michael, in American League, interleague games, rather, American League teams are concerned about their pitchers not only hitting, but especially running the bases. And it's happened before. It happened with Masahiro Tanaka in a game that we did on MLB Network, so you must have been there. It was a Yankee-Met game, and he tagged up and scored from third, but he ran the bases awkwardly, and he wound up on the injured list after that. So that's a legitimate concern, but at the same time, I think it's also going to be a bargaining chip. We know that some very difficult negotiations are coming up. This is the last year of the basic agreement. And one thing that the owners can offer the players is universal DH, because the DH is usually a high salaried player. So that's a bargaining chip. The National League is the only league anywhere in the world, so far as I know, that doesn't use the DH. That doesn't mean they're wrong, by the way, but it means that the tide is moving against them, and there are business reasons to offer the universal DH. I like it, though. It isn't a traditionalist thing. You know, people like to categorize people in simplistic ways. He's a traditionalist. He's a purist. He's this. He's that. Whatever my opinion is, I like to think about any issue that I've thought it through, and it's not a matter of left, right, or center. It's what I think about this individual thing for whatever reasons seem persuasive to me. I like the National League style. I'm not losing sleep over the American League style. That has its merits, too. But I find it interesting in the World Series when National and American League teams have to adapt depending upon which ballpark you're playing in. And I'm not saying it takes a PhD to make a double switch or to decide to sacrifice or pinch it for the pitcher, but it is an interesting wrinkle that distinguishes the National League from the American League. So some of that texture is lost when that distinction goes away. But I think it's inevitable that it's going to, and Western civilization will continue on.
You know, now, Don and Peter have certainly heard me say this, and maybe because I love the game so much, I don't think I'm a purist, but the fact that they are using the rules of the game as negotiating cudgels, it's insulting to me. That there should be other negotiating things that you could throw in there. Don't say, give me a DH, I'll give you this. Give me a seven-inning doubleheader, I'll give you this. These are what you're presenting to the public, Bob. It shouldn't be negotiating ploys. It's ridiculous. It makes baseball look small.
You know, I agree with you 100% on that. I'm not saying this is the way it should be. I'm thinking this is the way it's likely to be.
You're right.
And my problem with it is they're not partners. Because the things they're bargaining against each other benefit everyone, right, from a financial standpoint. As much as it might pain us to see them expand the postseason, it makes financial sense for both sides because they can create another network and be able to bring in more television money. And this is where I always come back to. I know it seems unconstitutional and un-American. The salary cap would force them to become partners. And in partnership would come would stop, I think, this divide of them just picking fights because they enjoy it. Where do you stand on baseball embracing what the other three major sports have done and think in some way, shape, or form of having a salary cap?
Yeah, and there are always complexities, as you know, Don, in the way it would play out and exactly the way they'd implement a salary cap or some version of it. But I think as long as what comes along with it is a salary floor, a substantial salary floor, so that teams are compelled to at least attempt to be competitive at that level. You don't have as many teams tanking, which, you know, the Cubs did it, the Astros did it, and it proved successful. So there's an incentive to do that. The Players Association has an incentive to try and mitigate that tendency. If you had a substantial salary floor as well as a salary cap, and within it, as is the case with other leagues, you guaranteed the players as a group in the aggregate a certain minimum percentage of the overall revenues, then maybe you've got something that could work.
We're talking with Bob Costas. He's in the Hall of Fame, Ford Frick Award winner in 2018, and you now have a new company, and that is Al Michaels. And for our younger listeners, Bob, they kind of like raise their eyebrow. Al Michaels in the Baseball Hall of Fame, they think of him as the NFL. But he was a really great baseball broadcaster, wasn't he, Bob?
Tremendous. Tom Verducci and I have been doing this series on the Baseball Network over the past few months called The Sounds of Baseball. And we opened with Vin Scully, then we did Jack Buck and Bob Uecker and Harry Carey, Joe Garagiola, and one of them was Al Michaels. And I knew how great a baseball announcer Al was, but when we went back into the archives and actually looked over entire games and clips, it reinforced for me just how terrific he was on baseball. Now, he hasn't done any baseball at all since 1995, and that was a one-off coming back after the strike where we at NBC and Al at ABC shared the postseason. Prior to that, he hadn't done any baseball since 1989. So it's understandable that a couple of generations are not really familiar with him as a baseball announcer. And somebody asked me whether he'd done enough baseball to be considered for the Hall of Fame. And I said, look at it this way. There are always exceptions. Think of Al Michaels on baseball the way you might Sandy Koufax or Gale Sayers in football. It isn't the quantity, it's the quality. You saw enough, no question about it. First ballot Hall of Fame guys. And in truth, Al did more baseball than that, but not on a national stage. He was the voice of the Reds for a while, while still in his 20s. Then he did the Giants on radio in the 1970s before doing a whole bunch of World Series and postseason All-Star games on ABC. So in my mind, he should have been in there long ago, and I'm glad that he made it yesterday.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bob, I assume you enjoyed Game 4 of the World Series as much as we all did, and it's probably right there at the top. But for this COVID sports season we've had, which has now lasted almost a year, what's been the high and the low through your eyes?
There were some NBA playoff games in the bubble that were just tremendous and had last-second buzzer-beating endings. That Game 4 of the World Series will always stand out to me. The fact that baseball, amid some skepticism, they had to walk a tightrope to get across the ravine from point A to point B, and to mix my metaphors here, yeah, maybe they hit some speed bumps, the Marlins and the Cardinals and a few others, but they never drove completely into the ditch. They've made it all the way through. You can only play the hand you're dealt, and I have to say that baseball did a good job to get to that point, to have a postseason, to crown a champion. The low point to me is the craven nature of college sports under these circumstances. These players are not compensated. They have no union to protect their interest. When you consider the size of a roster in college football and the traveling and all the rest, even with the best possible protocols, you're putting these players at risk, and it's not the decision of full-grown adults who are compensated as professionals. But beyond that, and I know that this may seem quaint and come on, be realistic, sports, college sports, are supposed to be in some way connected to a college and academic experience, at least in theory, even though we realize this has long since been tossed aside in too many cases. At least in theory, there's supposed to be a connection between this and being in college. Well, in almost every case, the universities that these players represent are not operating under anything like normal circumstances. Students are learning virtually, or they're not on campus at all. Does the debate team or any other, quote, extracurricular activity go about its activities the same way as it used to pre-COVID? And are there students at the games? Are there alums at the games? Something that connects this to a real college experience? They might as well put a neon sign outside the arena or outside the stadium that says, this has nothing to do with college and only to do with television money. Thank you for your patronage.
Well said.
What do you say, Bob? You know, we did every single game on Yes in that Yankee booth, whether if the Yankees were home or on the road. And I know that there's some bean counter somewhere with a pocket protector and the glasses on the end of his nose going, we could save millions of dollars not traveling. What would you say to these people that are probably going to do that to save the millions of dollars, even when COVID-19 is a distant memory?
Yeah, I think that's going to happen, not just with the games, but think about it. A year ago, if a television network wanted you or I to be on the air with them, they had two choices. They sent a car for us to take us to the nearest affiliate or a bureau, or they brought a crew to our house. Now they can just Zoom us. That's going to remain the case long after COVID is behind us. It's convenient. It's efficient. It gives them greater access. And most importantly, it's much less expensive. I imagine that there will be many regular season games that are done post-COVID that are done from a studio or from a booth, but not at the ballpark where the game is actually taking place. I do think that the big games, the network television NFL games, most NBA games, and certainly postseason baseball games, they're going to be done from the ballpark. But will there be some that are done post-COVID under what we now think of as COVID circumstances? Yeah. And I don't mean to be arrogant about this. I realize that I'm in a different position, a very fortunate position. I've been around for a very long time, and I've had more good fortune than I could possibly have ever dreamt of. So I don't criticize anybody else for what they do. Their circumstances are different. But at this point in my life, if you said to me, hey, would you like to do five more years of baseball from a studio? Why? You know, I'm not doing it for any other reason at this point, by and large, except that I love baseball. If I can't come to the ballpark, if I can't feel the experience, if I can't talk to the managers and players, if I can't socialize with all the baseball people, you guys know what that experience is. When you come to the ballpark, it's the people you see on the elevator. It's the people who work at the ballpark. That's all part of it. If I can't have that experience, then I don't need to do it anymore. But that's me. I'm lucky enough to be in that position. I don't criticize anybody else for what they do in their circumstances.
Bob, the one thing we were convinced of early on in the pandemic was that it would be a ratings bonanza once sports came back because everybody was stuck at home. And for the most part, it was level. And in the NBA's case, it tanked. Do you have any theories on why that was the case?
Multiple dynamics involved. You know, a lot of times people like to take the one axe they want to grind and say this is the sole reason. So there are a lot of right-wing people who say, oh, it's the social justice stuff that caused the fall in the ratings. Well, we can't say that isn't among the factors. For some people, it was a factor. But also, you're playing NBA games. Let's just talk about the NBA. You're playing NBA games in August. You're playing them without any atmosphere, without home court, without home fans, without any of that. And this was also a year where news drew people's attention disproportionately. Presidential election year, the news about COVID, people's circumstances changed considerably, their attentions were diverted. So there are overlapping reasons. They all played a part. And we're going to have to see what happens when things return to something closer than normal, what that does to viewing habits. Plus, even without COVID, without a presidential election, all the rest, people's viewing habits have been changing anyway because of streaming, because of the availability of highlights and everywhere you look. It's just a different world than it was, forget about a generation ago, than it was 3 or 4 years ago.
Now, I know you have to run. We love you. Thank you so much. Stay safe. And you have a blue check mark forever in our hearts.
Yes.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Don. Thanks, Peter. Happy holidays. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.